Welcome to Mind the Gap by Fresh Chat, a podcast where experts and hustlers share their stories on growth, marketing, and customer experience. I'm Abhishek, and I'm your host for the day.
Hello, listeners. Thank you so much for staying with us, for all the love, the feedback, and of course, for all the listening. This episode aims to bring different perspectives from different people. Taking the center stage today are leaders from companies like Cisco, Typeform, Chartmogul, Math3Den, and AppQuse. In case you're wondering, no, we're not taking a season break yet. We're just pausing and reflecting on all the episodes that we've done till now. While I still have your attention, let's get the numbers first and talk about what they mean to different people from different disciplines. Here's what Ty Magnin from AppQuse had to say about onboarding.
By 10% next quarter. Most often, retention, revenue, acquisition will not have a bigger impact on a business's ARR or MRR than activation does.
Cool.
Ty, I'm a product marketer and I own onboarding for FreshChat. Is onboarding tossed around or who
generation? And there's sort of a nuance between user onboarding and activation, but you can kind of just simplify by pairing them together and by saying that activation or the activation event in your user journey is the moment in which someone is getting value from your product. It's the moment in which you're like, okay, they're hooked, they're using it. And it's sort of the first moment of that. Typically there are like 3 to 5 things that someone has to do before they get to that activation moment. But that is the metric that we're talking about when we're speaking about how to, you know, the impact of onboarding, right? But there are, of course, those other 5 steps or 3 steps between.
And let's listen to what David Apple from Typeform had to talk about the myths around customer success.
When I became in charge of customer success at Typeform, I had previously been in charge of sales, and in sales, your metric is new business. And I wanted to have an important metric, and I was excited to take on churn. So I owned our net retention. So net retention is churn, expansion, reactivation. And so for a while I thought, well, that's the right metric for customer success. It's figuring out how to drive retention. But what I've since realized is that actually owning that metric has done our company, in my opinion, more harm than good. Because what happened is then marketing and product said, oh, you know what? Churn is customer success will figure that out. Let's focus on other stuff. And so every time I had a churn initiative that required collaboration with marketing or product, it was really hard to get those things prioritized because they were like, well, that's not my metric. You figure that out on your own. So I've since shifted the perception at Typeform that I'm no longer the owner of net retention, but rather the champion. So I still report on it. I still try to gather insights to improve it, but it's a metric that's owned by the whole organization.
And from Dan on what he thinks about the oversupply of content and why he thinks it's not necessary.
I'll tell a quick anecdotal story. So I had a client recently that came to me and we were working on a project together and they were posting 10 blog posts a week for like a year or 2 years, which when you do the math, I'm not super fast at math, but that's hundreds and hundreds of blog posts. And I think they had like 1500 blog posts. And the only reason they could give me they were doing this was that it's quote unquote working for our SEO. There was no other reason. There was no marketing reason, no business reason, no social media marketing reason, just nothing. They just thought it was this thing that worked for SEO. But the problem with that is that sort of activity actually can hurt your SEO in the long run because Google looks at the overall slices of pie that you have for content. And they are looking at what's the percentage of content that you have that is high quality versus low quality, that is short versus long, that's written for search engines versus actually written for human beings. And so this was a problem where they were applying a tactic only for SEO because they only thought it would help their rankings. And there was no other marketing or business reason for it.
6 episodes down, we wanted to reflect and find out important bits from the 6. There were parts of the episode that we felt were important. Ty Magnin from AppQuse on who owns onboarding.
growth teams that own onboarding. We see product managers, UX designers, sometimes developers, growth marketers, or product marketers. Those are very common. And even sometimes it's customer success. However, when it's customer success, that often is customer onboarding, not user onboarding. And there's a bit of a nuance there. But no matter what company you are a part of or anyone is a part of who's listening, the important part is not who owns onboarding, but that someone does own it. Because without directly responsible individual, onboarding sort of falls to no man's land. And then it doesn't get improved and no one sees the impact. The business doesn't realize the impact from that. From what I've seen, typically the best owner of onboarding is someone who is somewhat technical, yet close to the user, right? So maybe not as technical as an engineer, and maybe not as close to the user as customer success, but someone who does have the ability to span that. So often a product manager is a good person to own onboarding. Like you said, a product marketer and also growth people are great people to own it. And in terms of metrics, onboarding is typically measured by...
Ashwini Ashokan from Matri then goes all candid on entrepreneurship.
You know, I've said this a lot of times before as well, but I think running a company is like juggling like 10 time bombs, right? There's no other way to put it. I mean, the opportunity, if you get on the other side of this whole experience, I mean, I think there's immense rewards and the journey itself is extremely rewarding. But I think you're constantly aware that at any point of time, any one of those balls that you're juggling could fall down and just explode on your face. And it will. It's almost 100% probability that it is one of, you're going to keep doing that regularly. And you just got to figure out how to pick yourself up and keep moving. So, and you can't take people down with you every time one of those things go off. So you're almost faced with this dilemma of bringing people along for the ride across all kinds of, you know, teams, your customers, your investors. There's so many, your own family. There's so much going on, and you know, you do want to share and be transparent and bring people along for the ride. But at the same time, as someone who runs the company, I think you are faced with the challenge of not putting that on them, right? So it's what makes the journey intensely lonely. I've also almost along with that loneliness also comes a lot of self-flagellation, I think. I think founders and CEOs are constantly questioning their worth, if they're doing this right or not. And it's a massive mental struggle, I think.
Ed Shelley from Chartmogul on everything that is content marketing.
So when it comes to ideation for us at Chartmogul, I would love to say it's a really structured process. We've made a lot of changes in the past year or two to try and add some more structure there, but it's essentially, we run like an ideation session every couple of weeks within the marketing team, where we try to encourage maybe what is kind of similar to kind of journalistic approach to like pitching stories. So we encourage people to pitch ideas for content. And when they're actually pitching that, we kind of follow something that's actually quite similar to what I used to do in a product team back when I was a product manager, which is thinking around the kind of business case for a piece of content, just as you would think around the business case of a particular feature for your software.
David Apple from Typeform gives a breakdown on the email response to an unhappy customer.
I always follow the same approach, which is I start my email by saying, first of all, this was escalated to me because, and that usually helps calm people down. They know that that they're speaking to someone who's quote unquote, you know, more senior or more important. And I start by saying, I completely understand where you're coming from. And I basically paraphrase the problem that they have in my own words so that they know that I actually understand why they're pissed off and what their problem is. And that usually diffuses the anger, because often the anger comes from people feeling misunderstood. And then I'll go on, and maybe oftentimes I actually just repeat what the member of our support team said using slightly different words. say, I'm sorry that there's nothing else we can do for you, but you're a valued customer, and I'll try to do something else that's nice for them. That maybe that's generally the way I approach those types of situations.
Dan Shrew from Evolving SEO on how the SEO world is changing.
I think I can highlight two monumental changes in SEO since that time. One was really around the 2012-2013 period, and that's when Google got really aggressive with handling the web span problem and site quality problems. That's when you saw the Panda update and the Penguin update, and that was the one pendulum switch in one direction towards content marketing and away from link building. And then since that time, the next biggest switch has really gone back in the other direction, where now technical SEO is a huge deal now, and it's very on the forefront of people's minds and really, really key and popular, and it gets a lot of attention. And so there's just been – and a guy by the name of Mike King, he goes by iPullRank, he kind of predicted in a way what he called the technical SEO renaissance. It was based off a post he wrote almost 2 years ago, I think, where he saw this resurgence in the interest of technical SEO, and that's just – really like how the landscape is today.
Productivity hack. We all juggle several things. How do we stay productive on what we do? In time, noise cancelling headphones don't work. Flight modes on your mobile phone might not last long as well. I asked this to our guest and I listened to some interesting insights on how to get into the work zone.
Oftentimes, I find myself shutting off a lot of this. Given the default state is me listening to all of this or soaking in all of this, I actually find inspiration in a lot of silence. As someone who's constantly traveling between different countries, I think, and spending a large chunk of my time out here in India, I think silence is something that I yearn for. I yearn for a lot of silence. And I think the kind of creative energy that silence can bring, it allows you to process all of this stuff that you listen on podcasts or blogs, at events, on webinars, on books. And I'm usually, like I mentioned, I'm usually surrounded by sketches. I'm constantly sketching out my ideas. I'm surrounded by notes. I'm surrounded by stickies. I'm surrounded by storyboards. And to me, these things are probably the most important source of ideation and inspiration.
And I do think that too often when we talk about productivity tips, we're talking about what to do at the office, when I really believe that the things that are going to make you the most productive are actually the things that you do outside of the office.
Here we are at my favorite section. Books, podcasts, articles, our guests share them all.
I mean, that's sort of like mental psyche stuff. But in terms of like business books that I really like, I think Habit by Nir Eyal is a very good product book that relates to user onboarding. I mean, for marketing books, I just got a copy of Data-Driven Marketing sent to me from Clearbit, which is a pretty cool book. Flipped through it, haven't got all the way through each chapter of it. I like Ogilvy on Advertising, some of the classic marketing books, The Boar on Letters for copywriting. And for management, I really like Andy Grove's High Output Management. That sort of just gave you the whole variety of things that I like to read.
Lovely. I think these are...
I am a big fan of the A16Z podcast. It's huge for me. I draw inspiration from that podcast like crazy. Sonal is just amazing. And just the kind of stuff they discuss is just incredible. And I think that reminds me, Ben Horowitz's Hard Things About Hard Things is definitely one of my top books. I think especially as somebody building an enterprise company, I think his stories really resonated with me. And so that is something so that is one of my favorite podcasts. I would be lying if I didn't bring up Jason Lemkin's podcast. I know that's a bit of a cliche there, a super cliche there for somebody who's in B2B. But yes, I really, really like the content that's discussed there. It's very accessible. It's very actionable. And that's what I really love about that.
I found that a number of VCs lately have really stepped up their content game. Like in SaaS, especially when I started out, it was, you know, a few individual bloggers kind of, and they were effectively the thought leaders in SaaS and SaaS metrics. But so I'm a huge fan of First Round Capital. They produce some excellent content, and they have really started to, they have a blog called First Round Review, and they have incredibly interesting content there that really takes what used to just be kind of individual venture capitalist thought leadership and turns it into much more of a structured output. So I'm always looking to them to kind of get inspiration and to understand what the VCs are thinking in this space.
The one I've liked the most that has helped me the most at work is a book called High Output Management by Andy Groves. It's an old management book that still remains so useful and powerful today. It's really helped me learn how to manage a larger team. My team, almost 40 people, and I never managed a team that big before joining Typeform, so those principles really helped. And right now I'm reading a Harvard Business Review book that's like a compilation of 10 different Harvard Business Review articles about managing myself. It's called Manage Yourself. So those would be my top two at the moment. Before, I really liked the spin selling book when I was more in my sales days. That really inspired me as well.
You can be running a business, or you're a manager who's looking at hiring the right kind of people, or you're probably the candidate yourself. In the next section, you hear what people look for when they're hiring.
So much of what happens behind the scenes in marketing appears on the screen in the written word. And being able to really have an understanding of the power of language and how to use it in an effective way to move people, I think is the one strength I think all marketers need to have.
Lovely. Ty, before my production team decides to play the awesome outro music, thank you so much for being on the show. I really loved this today.
I think when you look at kind of hiring and scaling a content team, that the kind of people that you should look for are perhaps not the kind of people that are instantly obvious for kind of placement in that team. And I would say the biggest example there is probably myself. Like I'm not traditionally a marketer. Like I joined Chartmogul early on from a product management role and a career that involved a period in software engineering and computer science. And I believe that kind of perspective gave me something unique, or at least an approach that was different to maybe what a kind of quote unquote classical marketer would have taken in that role. So when I look at people today, or if I look for new recruits or people to work in content marketing, actually I don't care so much about their background. I think you need to look at people that have a general curiosity in a space and kind of a passion to learn. I don't think they need to be a thought leader. They don't need to already have an opinion, but they need the ability to very quickly kind of absorb the industry and form their own opinion. So actually picking people from different disciplines, I think can really give you an edge as a team. So I would love to build like a dream content marketing team with people from like all kinds of different disciplines from a SaaS business. You know, I would love to have somebody from a finance background writing for us at Chartmogul who has experience in the kind of financial aspect of building a business.
Basically, people who are just passionate about helping people. But if you're talking about customer success leader, Then I would say different skills, such as analytical skills, operational excellence, and operational management skills, because the great customer-facing skills are not so scalable. And in order to build a customer success organization, I think it's important to have somebody or several people that can set up the operations in a scalable way based on data and with the right tools and everything else. For me, the first question would have to be around culture. I think that part of the reason why our customer success team does a really good job at Typeform is because we work well together and we have a nice team culture. So my first question might be something like, if you were starting your own business and you created three values to run your business or for your employees to follow, what would those three values be to get a feel for what's important to them? I also always like to ask why this person is interviewing for this job and see how they answer that. So is it more because of Typeform? Is it more because of the role? What's their plan? And I like to try to test humility. So I would also probably ask for them to tell me about a situation where they made a big mistake and they had to admit to it, and what, you know, tell me the story of what mistake they made and how they handled the situation afterwards.
We are super excited about the conversations that we have had till now and totally looking forward to the ones that we're going to have. A quick reminder, you can be the host and record a question that you would like to ask for our upcoming guest. See you soon on the next episode. Thank you for listening to Mind the Gap. Subscribe to our podcast at freshchat.com/mindthegap. You can check out our upcoming episodes and ask questions to our guest by sending an audio message there. If you enjoyed today's episode, share it with the world. See you guys soon.